Despite bans, beatings, and even the use of facial recognition to pursue protesters, Turkey's opposition out in the streets in its greatest numbers in more than a decade. This after the jailing of center-left opposition leader Ekrem İmamoğlu, the popular mayor of Istanbul, charged with corruption and abetting terrorism, just as he's been plebiscited by the CHP to carry the party's colors in the 2028 presidential election. Will the protesters prevail? Turkey has seen many a rule of law showdown through the years. One time, Istanbul Mayor Recep Tayyip Erdogan was himself jailed in 1999, essentially for being popular. He has since enjoyed 22 years of uninterrupted power, which a potential constitutional reform would extend. What to make of this crackdown, and what to make of its pushback? Today in the France 24 debate, will Turkey's mass protests rattle Recep Tayyip Erdogan? With us, independent journalist Mehmet Akgün. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
She's a former Istanbul correspondent, Marie Jégo, senior correspondent for French daily newspaper, Le Monde.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
From Brussels, Demir Murat Serek, adjunct professor at the Brussels School of Governance, will be joining us. I don't know if you can hear us yet. We're still having connection issues there, but it'll work itself out. No connection problems with Washington. Zineb Ribua is program manager at the Hudson Institute think tank's Center for Peace and Security in the Middle East. Thank you for being with us. We've lost the connection there. We'll patch it all up in a minute. Your reactions on the hashtag F24 debate. Yeah, no let up. Faced with a lock-in, some students this Monday at the campus of Istanbul Technical University decided an original way to play hooky and to join the mass protest. Perhaps we can show those images there of them sneaking out the window to join their comrades. Despite 1,100 arrests so far, those students undeterred after a weekend of anger over those formal charges unveiled against Ekrem İmamoğlu. Emerald Maxwell has more.
It's been a decade since Turkey has seen a protest movement like it. For the sixth day in a row, Ekrem İmamoğlu supporters took to the streets of Istanbul, angry and worried.
See, this is very important for us, for children, for future.
We want democracy. We want the people to choose the elected. And we want the free will to choose who we want without them being imprisoned.
Istanbul's mayor for over 5 years, Ekrem İmamoğlu was officially nominated by his party on Monday to run in the 2028 presidential election as Recep Tayyip Erdogan's main rival. But İmamoğlu was arrested on Wednesday, then jailed and stripped of his mayorship on charges of corruption and terrorism. Charges fabricated, the opposition says, to prevent him from coming to power. His arrest by Turkish police was followed by violent clashes across the country, leading to the arrest of more than 1,100 people, according to authorities. Accused by his critics of undermining democracy, President Erdogan blamed his opponents.
It has become apparent once again that the opposition cannot be trusted to run a country, local governments, or even a buffet.
The opposition has called for a boycott of the pro-government mainstream media, which has largely avoided reporting on the nationwide demonstrations.
And before we go to our panel, let's go to Istanbul. Boran Takak is a political science student at Marmara University. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me what your day has been like and what your weekend was like.
Can I take the question again? The connection is very bad, so
the connection's patchy.
There's also disturbance.
I was asking you what your Monday has been like and what your weekend was like.
It was a quite heavy weekend because, as you know, like last week, Wednesday, the student movements have begun to protest. Let me get my thought back. as you all know, like the Wednesday, the Istanbul University has cancelled the university degree of İmamoğlu, the mayor of Istanbul, and the Istanbul University has been the symbol of university protests as well. So the university movements and the student protests have been quite important in these last days. And we have been seeing a lot of like police force in the, especially the university protest in Ankara, Izmir, or Bursa, because the main place that people have been gathering up is Saraçhane in Istanbul, which is the president, mayor of Istanbul's building, basically. And the protest outside that area has been very disturbed by the police, and there has been like extreme force and violence used by the police. And in this weekend, we have seen a lot of like pressurized water and pepper spray used by the police on the protesters. There has been widespread internet blockages in Turkey, and everything has been basically disturbed by the government to make it difficult for us to organize. And it has been very hard and stressful weekend for me and a lot of Turkish citizens. And basically that, like, it has been stressful, and but we have hope about this, because this is one of the strongest anti-government protests in Turkey in the last probably 10 or 20 years, because most of the time, like, if you protest against government or if you chant anything against Tayyip Erdoğan or AKP or government, it has been like very commonplace to use extreme violence to stop that protest. But we have been seeing a lot of open and public protest of Erdoğan, and it has been like the government cannot do anything most of the time, because everyone is on the streets, everyone is protesting the government, everyone has been very built up to.
You're feeling safety in numbers, is what you're saying. Boran, just tell us, you talked about anxiety, but when you speak to the other students, are they determined? Will they sustain it? Or is this only going to happen for a few days and then it's over?
We have been taking public forums today, and a lot of universities have been gathering up to plan about how to organize their student bodies in order to protest. And there has been a lot of public calls for academic protests and academic stoppage of activities. And we have been like, this is probably the brightest protesting movement in Turkey, because most of the time there has been like a very clear despair explained by the students. But this time, like, there has been a lot of participation by the students. There has been a lot of anticipation of something to happen. And the participation today by every student in the universities has been a clear indicator of how hopeful everyone is about this time being able to create something in Turkey, a change in Turkey. And we have been very hopeful this time, like not just me, but a lot of students, friends of mine as well. And this is probably the most hopeful protesting, most hopeful protest of last 20 years, probably.
Boran Takak, so many thanks for joining us live there from Istanbul. and for speaking with us. Apologies for the patchy connection. Mehmet Akgün, a couple of points. That hopefulness, your thoughts on why people are so determined this time. There have been other crackdowns in the past. Mm-hmm. Why is there this determination?
Right. I think that's a very good question to start off. When you look at the last movements, the last biggest mass upheavals, protests that we've had in Turkey, it was during the Gezi Park events in 2013. What followed on from that was a massive crackdown, and people lost hope. In fact, a lot of the main opposition parties, the main opposition party, the Republican People's Party, the CHP, on several occasions called people not to go out on the streets to protest because they feared that this would lead to provocation by the government, or that it would be branded provocation. What we did not have in the Gezi movement was a political head, if you will, to lead the movement. This is not the case today. What you have today is a challenger to Erdogan's power, Ekrem İmamoğlu, who's won three elections in a row against the government in Istanbul, and he has made himself a challenger. The CHP, therefore, has taken, let's say, lead of this movement, and I think that that has led to enough space for a lot of people to come out onto the street and to not only protest the arrest of Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu, but to voice their concerns about democratic changes in Turkey overall.
And is this something that's just for the students, just for the liberal cities, or is there something national here?
There's definitely a national element to it. I mean, you see, when you look at they started off in Istanbul, and in fact, they started us student protests. What we had on the first day was a kind of atmosphere of doubt whether or not this would catch on. But then what happened is a tiny group of students from Istanbul University managed to go through a police barricade, and that footage was circulated all through social media. And therefore, quite quickly, this led to the congregation of thousands, if not tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people in front of the municipal building, and that spread across the country. And the perhaps the most surprising or hopeful thing for the protesters is that you see protests in areas which are traditionally much more conservative, which usually vote for Erdogan and his party, the Justice and Development Party, the AKP, including in his hometown, from which Ekrem İmamoğlu hails from as well.
Right, from the Turkish coast there.
Yes, the Black Sea.
All news stations, by the way, were ordered to cut live coverage of Sunday night protests, but it's on social media that many citizens were watching the likes of one Istanbul demonstrator who donned a dervish's outfit and was copiously pepper sprayed by police officers. That's just one example there. I believe we can now go to Brussels and Demir Murat Serek. Thanks for being with us here in the France 24 debate. Earlier, we had a young student on who was telling us how they're now organizing. There's a feeling of hope. They're in it for the long haul. We've even heard talk of some who want to boycott AKP-affiliated businesses. I don't know if that's like all the people you've met over the years who've said they're quitting Facebook, but is that a possibility? There could be a consumer movement at this point?
I mean, as the previous speaker suggested, I think the main difference this time is there is also a political leadership. Actually, the idea was very common among young people, but also it was echoed by the president of the CHP last night. And people are really preparing also lists since yesterday. There are also all this like pro-government media who are not covering this major protest either. So this is going to be a major effect, of course, because those media organizations, they are usually also active in businesses and they have other sectors as well than media. So this time, yes, it can be actually quite influential. And because these people are actually the ones representing educated but also upper middle classes, also middle classes in Turkey. So they are the ones with the purchasing power. They are the ones actually really spending money for lots of things, for social activities, cultural activities, houses, cars. So they are the main customers of supermarkets. So in a way, this time, I think they want to use this power because for such a long time, these people have been used. But those companies, they have not been respecting what they want for future. So maybe this time, this can work. And we already seen actually some instances that some of those TVs last night, they started to cover or they at least try to give a bit more coverage to what's happening.
So that's interesting. They're politically affiliated, but they care about the ratings.
They care about ratings, but they care about also, as their company is active in different sectors, they care about their other products, other affiliated companies as well. So that's all coming in a package, actually, because we are not talking about really media, especially for the mainstream media, which is totally independent of businesses or politics, but they are actually very much linked to both politics, but also other business interests, too.
Marie Jago, your years in Istanbul, you were not there for Gezi. You came just slightly after. But you were there for that attempted coup, that failed coup against Erdogan. There were people in the streets in favor, of course, of the president. But there, you also saw, crackdown on Kurds, and there were protests then. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, over the years, has seen off challenges, picked fights, or had... when you first saw last week this coming to a head, did you think, well, at the end of the day, it's Erdogan always wins? Or did you think this might be different?
It might be different, I think. But if you see carefully, as you said, Erdogan, he likes to live through crisis. And it plays in his favor. Usually,
he fancies a fight.
Yeah, he likes it. But I think this time, maybe he's creating his own Frankenstein, which is he's creating a movement that would be very difficult to cut. And there is another thing I would like to add. The difference with Gezi and 2013 is that during Gezi, there was a protest against Erdogan, but there was not such an economical crisis. Here we have two things. We have people on the streets because they are shocked by what happened to Mr. Imamoglu, who was arrested, but also there is a huge frustration because people cannot make ends meet just because the inflation is so high, almost 50%. It was much more worse last year. Now it's 50%. And Turkey was just kind of breathing some fresh air recently. And now all this thing has been completely killed. What is interesting, next Wednesday, when they decided to arrest Mr. İmamoğlu, Mr. Mehmet Şimşek, the Ministry of Finance, was invited in Istanbul, bankers and representative of hedge funds to invest in Turkey. The guys were having the meeting and they were watching at their telephones and watching as the Turkish lira was crumbling. Turkish lira lost a lot of its value. The Turkish lira, the local Turkish money, is highly overrated. And now we see that the whole system could quite be very... It would be very difficult. And I think for myself that only the market can persuade Mr. Erdogan to change course, not the demonstration, because Mr. Erdogan, what is he going to do? He's going to screw more and more to maybe he will going to announce a curfew. But because if you look carefully, all the demonstrations, they take place during night at 8 or 8:30 when the people meet. It's very easy for him. He will try to make it harder and harder.
If there is a curfew, what then?
Then people have to stay home. Will they do this? Will they face the police or the army? I don't know where Mr. Erdogan is able to stop this. It could be a bloodshed as well, because apparently Erdogan wants to change, and he wants to have a full autocracy, like the Economist said, naked autocracy. Before, we had a competitive authoritarian state. Now, we have the... He's showing his true face now. But maybe it will come back to him not in a good manner, I think. But I think mostly economically. Because Turkey actually is having some investment. It's short, it's a portfolio, short-term investments. And I think that all the people that invest money in Turkey, they look at what happened. Of course, they will take their money back. So it automatically it will have... Erdogan will have a price to pay for this. Economically, it's very dangerous. The country is not that stable. The money is not stable. So he plays a dangerous game.
Zineb Ribua is with us from Washington. Zineb, the last time you were on this show, Erdogan had just reached a deal with the outlawed PKK. It seemed as though he was burying the hatchet with Kurdish separatists to a degree. And there was this feeling that perhaps politically things were softening. Now comes this. Are the two related?
Well, it's very possible, and it's very hard to tell. What I can say, though, is that Washington really sees now Erdogan's hold as increasingly brittle. He's governing through tight control over the media, the judiciary, internal security. And so I think Washington is really navigating a strategic duality where it sees Turkey as a vital NATO ally, but its authoritarian drift, evident in the targeting of opposition figures like Imamoglu, is really raising serious concerns. But I think that U.S. policy, especially Trump administration policy, will try to aim to preserve a certain cooperation on defense and regional issues. You know, for example, there was this interview with Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff, and he said that the recent phone call between President Trump and Erdogan on March 16 was great and transformational. And I think that Washington is really closely, I think, watching the fractures within the Turkish opposition, fractures within domestic situation in Turkey. But I think there are discussions at the highest level on foreign policy. I mean, now Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan is coming to Washington to discuss Turkey's coordination efforts in the fight against Daesh and so on. So I think the duality is still there.
The duality is still there. Donald Trump, who, as you said, had that phone call with Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the same Trump who, according to Fox News, is now considering the sale of F-35 fighter jets to Turkey. Back in 2019, the U.S. had balked at the sale of F-35s because Ankara had signed up for Russian S-400 missiles and didn't want Moscow's handlers so close to their planes and be able to spy on the what was inside of those F-35s. Zineb Ribua, do you see that, of course, that report coming out before the formal charges were planted? It came out, I believe, on Saturday. But still, could Donald Trump kind of ignore the street and make a deal on F-35s?
Like, everything is possible with President Donald Trump, and that's why Hakan Fidan is visiting. I think that the F-35s are definitely back on the table. The United States needs and wants broader defense ties with Turkey. There are several signals around that. Turkey is playing a role in Ukraine, is playing a role in Syria. It's also, you know, a minor but very important role in Gaza as well. So I think for the United States, it's more about making sure that Turkey can be pushed out of Russia's orbit. So there is the strategic calculus, and I think it's a very important and a strategic priority now for the United States to consider that. I'd say that for the countering America's adversaries through Sanctions Act is a very important one. However, it's important to mention that any F-35 transfer would still require approval from the Senate Foreign Relations and House Foreign Affairs Committee. So I think Turkey will have to also convince Congress.
Demir Muratsarek, let me ask you, at this point in time, we have heard some criticism of what's going on right now inside of Turkey, but it hasn't been full throttled. If you're a leader in Europe, are you thinking about Turkey, NATO member who can help when it comes to Ukraine, or are you thinking about the rule of law issues that we're discussing in this show?
I'm connected with the previous question, actually. I think Turkish government saw the international environment as an ideal moment for this move. And for Trump, potentially, they are right. But as for the EU, Turkish government assumed that given the historical security threats Europe is facing, the EU desperately needs Turkey and wouldn't push back too hard. But I think that perception is only partially true. I mean, as you said, EU hasn't remained silent, even if the response doesn't have much practical impact for now. But more importantly, I think there was an opportunity, actually, a historical opportunity to revive Turkey relations through this strategic cooperation on defense and Europe's future security. Unfortunately, I think that opportunity seems to have been missed. But that opportunity is also, I think, very important tool potentially for the EU leaders to use as well, because it is very clear that this is very important for Turkish government, for Turkish defense industry, and for many other businesses who are actually willing to invest in further cooperation with the EU in terms of defense. So this should be used, I think, very well by the EU leaders, and they should make it very clear that some, at least, level of democracy is still needed for this type of cooperation to be established between Turkey and the EU, and giving Turkey a chair around the table for EU's future security. They need to establish a relationship based on trust. And for this, I think EU may really use this leverage very well on Turkey. And this can also actually help government to change the policy to a certain extent. Because, I mean, beyond that, EU's leverage over Turkey is very limited. We need to understand this fact as well, because it has weakened over the time due to many mistakes. And at this point, I think EU doesn't have many tools to use against Turkey. So that's why I think this is a very historical opportunity to use this tool. Because this is also important for Turkey. Maybe Turkey has not been very vocal about it, but this decline of NATO and potentially even end of NATO may also cause a lot of problems for Turkey, because for now maybe there is low level of relations with Russia, there is dialogue going on, but Russia has always been a historical, actually, threat for Turkey and Turkish security as well. So that's why I think it's mutually possible that both Turkey and EU should work together, but this should be done also based on common values, including democratic standards as well. That's also the expectation of those young people protesting.
Those young people protesting. Marie Jigaud, on Thursday is going to be another one of those meetings of NATO minus the U.S., I think, that's happening. How does an Emmanuel Macron handle a Recep Tayyip Erdogan in view of those live pictures we're watching?
Difficult, but what we have seen in the past is European Union was not very active. So they are protesting. They say, oh, it's terrible, it's not good, but nothing happens because as like it was said, there are few tools that EU could handle and have some influence on Erdogan. So I don't think... I think that European Union is so now... has a big desire to see Erdogan helping in the problem in the Russian-Ukrainian war. because Turkey has offered this its service and saying that they could put some troops in Ukraine. We don't have so much states in among European states that are willing to help. So I think that the European Union is not going to be very hard with Erdogan. I don't think so. I don't think it will happen.
All right. And so Turkey has more leverage. Who's got more leverage?
Turkey or has more leverage now because we need Turkey in the conflict in Ukraine.
Okay, so that's a card in favor of Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He's got leverage and he's got Washington, which will look on him, at least the executive branch of government, benevolently. Let me ask you a question here, Mehmet Akgün. How much does Recep Tayyip Erdogan control the levers of the state today? I ask the question because of the fact that he did suffer setbacks in municipal elections. He doesn't have as many municipalities as he once did. Does the civil service, like Marie was talking about the scenario of perhaps there being a curfew imposed, will the police, will the civil servants, will they obey as one man, as we say here in French?
Well, I mean, when it comes to a curfew, I don't think that that's really realizable necessarily, because what you have today is, you have to understand that, because Marie Jégot, you've mentioned that the Economist headline of Turkey now becoming a full-blown autocracy, I think that is to be taken with a grain of salt. Turkey remains a parliamentary democracy with free elections, which are not necessarily fair, and coming back to your question, because so much power is concentrated in the state apparatus. And that is especially the case since the 2017 referendum, which has shifted the government to a presidential system, more akin to what we have in France, for example. But it still rests, the government, on parliamentary and electoral legitimacy. And that's something key that we've seen with these protests.
So it's a democracy, but a winners-takes-all democracy.
You could put it that way. But there are still levers for the opposition to use. Less and less, but they're there. And when it comes to what extent is there state capture, let's say, of the bureaucracy, I think today, to a large extent, yes. But how that is going to be used, to what extent, that is debatable. And I think Erdogan and the AKP are still cautious when it comes to that. Not to, you know, go overkill, if you will. And we've seen this with these protests because, you know, let me remind you that İmamoğlu was arrested and charged with these charges right before a pre-election campaign to elect him as a candidate organized by the CHP. And we've seen massive support in his favor. In fact, 15 million people voted in favor. That is 2 million more than what the CHP won in the last round of parliamentary elections. And what we've seen is that the fears that many people in the opposition camp had of the appointment of a governor to the Istanbul municipality was thwarted. Now, it's
because that's happened in other municipalities where the mayor has been...
In Kurdish municipalities, because with Kurds, you can do this. But usually you can't do this with a CHP municipality. It was not possible. It was possible for Kurdish, because Kurdish citizens, they are like second-hand citizens. So you can arrest the mayor and you put an administrator and everything is okay. But usually you don't do this with the CHP, with the Republicans People Party. They just did it quite recently. They started to arrest them. It was interesting because in 2019... I had an interview with Mr. İmamoğlu. He was just elected. And I said to him, do you think that what happened in the Kurdish areas where we had 10 mayors arrested and they brought AKP nominated then administrators from the Ministry of... it was the Ministry of Justice or something like this, of Interior, I don't remember. And I asked him, do you think it could happen to you? He said, no, I think it couldn't happen to me. And you see, it happened. This is unheard of. unheard of, because the CHP is a traditional party, is an institution. It was created by Atatürk. It was impossible to. But we can see that now Erdogan has become as a pharaoh. He's a pharaoh. So he could name, as you said, I think this is very naive to think that there is still a democracy, parliamentarian. There is nothing left with him. He's ready to go very far.
Yes, but he still has, I mean, this is the thing. He decides the rules, but you have an opposition party which tries to bend those to the best of its capabilities in order to react, which you don't have, say, in Russia or Iran.
For sure, you're right.
That's the thing, and I think that's a very important nuance.
Yeah,
is that people today can still come out onto the streets, and this was not a given. This was not a given, but it was shown to be possible, and that is what happened in the last 6 days, and we're going to see how it pans out. But for now, any rash movement, a reaction on the part of Erdogan, would be dangerous, I think. And that's what they're calculating, and that's how they're playing their cards. Of course, this can change in a month. You don't know how long these protests are going to continue. You don't know to what extent the opposition is going to have the political willpower or the skills to canalize this energy that is out on the streets into an actual opposition strategy. But I think that it would be too rash, perhaps, to jump to conclusions when it comes to the full authorization of Turkey. Although we may spot these trends, you know, if people can still come out on the streets in such large numbers, that remains an important factor at play.
And at the heart of it all, a one-time real estate developer who burst onto the national stage when he prevailed as a dark horse candidate for mayor of Turkey's largest city in 2019, Eliza Herbert, has more on Ekrem İmamoğlu.
Born in 1971, Ekrem İmamoğlu rose to fame in the 2019 Istanbul mayoral race, vying for an office once held by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He was an outsider, centrist in his politics, a Muslim, but from the secular CHP party. He challenged 25 years of leadership in the city by Erdogan's AKP. But when he won, the AKP demanded the vote be annulled.
The Istanbul election has become a symbol of democracy. We can see that. From now on, we have a responsibility to democracy as great as our responsibility to Istanbul.
A fresh poll saw him elected mayor in June of that year, thwarting Erdogan. İmamoğlu has since raised his sights to the presidency, but his ambitions have been scuppered at every turn. In 2022, he was convicted of defamation for calling Istanbul election officials idiots over the annulment of his first 2019 victory. With a 2.5-year sentence pending appeal, that precluded him from running for president the following year. It was the first in a barrage of legal probes and indictments that he has criticised as being politically motivated. Erdogan sued İmamoğlu in November 2024 for slander, and in January, prosecutors opened two new probes over his remarks about an Istanbul prosecutor and court-appointed expert. On March 19th, he was arrested. One charge of supporting a terrorist organisation was later dropped, but charges of corruption were pursued. This would trigger Turkey's worst unrest in more than a decade. For consecutive days, hundreds of thousands protested in his defence, widely viewing him as the only candidate who could defeat the strong hand of Erdogan.
The aim of the Erdogan government is to eliminate a very strong rival in the coming elections. That's so certain. That's why millions of people are taking to the streets in Turkey.
On March 23rd, he was dismissed as mayor and placed in pretrial detention. The same day, he was named as the opposition's 2028 presidential nominee.
Demir Murat Serak, you heard earlier our guests here in the studio saying how the difference between now and the Gezi protests of 2013 is that this is most definitely not a leaderless movement. There's a leader and there's a leadership. Is Recep Tayyip Erdogan making a smart move here politically by neutralizing, if you will, a long time ahead of the next elections and a long time of the constitutional reform he'll need to run again, his main rival?
I mean, it goes back to the question about actually if Turkey is still democratic. I mean, last few elections in Turkey we were considering it as free but not fair. But of course, if you start eliminating the likely presidential candidate as well, then there is a big question mark about the free aspect as well. And Erdogan has always been using actually the legitimacy of elections very well. For a very long time, he had broad support among the public. He even got actually more than 50% support at some point. But now it seems that it is really declining and he's not really preventing this decline. So I think this move comes at the moment that when Ekrem İmamoğlu was going to select it as the opposition's candidate through the primaries on Sunday. I mean, you mentioned the curfews, but you don't even need curfews at the moment because there are also major restrictions. At the moment, there are protest bans in Turkey, social media restrictions, and even limits on public transport. But even then, those millions are coming together. Even then, 15 million people all around the Turkey, they voted in the CHP's primaries. And this is the first time a political party organizing primary elections in Turkey. So all those actually points are supporting the fact that now it's very likely for Erdogan to lose in the next elections. And obviously, he's reacting in different ways. I'm not sure if this is the reaction that will be beneficial for him in the mid and long term. But I believe that there is also, within the government circles as well, there is also some level of panic. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to deal with this because actually they've been dealing with this issue for a long time. I mean, AKP has been losing support for a very long time. First, they addressed the issue by cooperating with the nationalist MHP party. Now they are even trying to reach out to Kurds through this new Kurdish process. But whatever they do, actually, they don't manage to increase the AKP's votes and support in the public. So we should see it, we should read it from this perspective.
Marie Jégot, the Ekrem İmamoğlu that you interviewed back in 2019, you say he didn't think he could be stripped of his mayorship of Istanbul, but I'm sure in a corner of his head there was always the possibility that one day he might wind up in jail if you're a political opponent of Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
Yes, but it was again, it was very difficult to imagine that Erdogan was going to go so far that to arrest the mayor, the elected mayor of Istanbul. Then you say that Erdogan, there is still a democracy and there are still competitive elections. And okay, but this is his main rival. Erdogan cannot stand that this guy has won. When the election took place, first, there were two rounds. At the second round, İmamoğlu won. He won against the AKP, the Erdogan presidential party. He won with, 14,000 more votes than the AKP candidate.
A very slim margin.
Slim margin. Then Erdogan decided that the vote was not correct, and there was a third vote, in fact. The third vote, there were 800,000 more vote for İmamoğlu than for the AKP candidate. So maybe it could backlash as well this time. You're right, people are really brave, and Turkish people are not like Russians, because Russians, they don't have a political culture. They were for 100 years under the Tsars. In Turkey, it's not like this. So this is good. People react. But, I mean, Erdogan, he has eliminated the justice, eliminated the free press, eliminated everything. So what is going to happen? We don't know.
All right, certainly.
Very quickly to add on to that, yes. I think one of the main things that we miss when it comes to talks about authorization is as you mentioned, and as other speakers have mentioned, is the agency of the people involved on the ground at the end of the day. And I think that's to be put back in the equation when we talk about that.
And certainly Turkish people not fatalistic at this moment in time. I want to thank you so much for being with us, Mehmet Agun. I want to thank Marie Jégot.
Thank you.
Demir Murat Serek for being with us from Brussels. Zineb Ribouat from Washington, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate. All right, we're still on TV.